This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the October 14th edition of the DRF Players Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you and joined today by the usual crew. We have, from the DRF offices in New York, on my right, Mike Hogan. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. I hurried to get here. Hurrying down 3rd Avenue, I felt a little bit like Kent DeSormo getting stuck down on the rail trying to rally.
A sight Jonathan Kinchin, our other guest, has never seen in all the copious tape work he does for Southern California. From, I believe, your land base today in Austin, Texas, Jonathan Kinchin, how are you?
Oh, what's going on? I almost made a joke at Mike's last comment, but I thought it would be inappropriate.
I'm trying to think which direction you were going to go with that inappropriate joke, but
I'll have to text it to you.
Okay, it's one of those. Nice work. We are broadcasting live today again. Folks who are interested can check out my Twitter feed. We're sending out a little broadcast as we're doing this. It's an experiment. Today we might need a little bit of help from the audience. We've got plenty to talk about, but it's always nice to get some audience participation, audience feedback as well. So feel free to chime in, ask questions, let us know what's going on. I promise if I'm responding to you, I will try not to tap the keys too hard like we did in our maiden voyage in this format. Generally speaking, well, let's do a little production meeting in the middle of the show. Does it sound like we're keeping the Tuesday-Friday schedule through the Breeders' Cup, but then Breeders' Cup week, we're just going to add shows. We're going to maybe dump the Friday show and do Wednesday, Thursday instead. Is that what we're looking at, Mike Hogan?
I think that makes sense. Yeah, and we'll also have webinars too, which will include at least me, if not you as well, plus some other special guests. Suffice to say, we're going to have a lot of stuff coming up Breeders' Cup week.
I can't wait. I'm happy to work with you to put that schedule together if you want. I'll be out there in California, but I should be available for at least half of the 6 hours of programming we have planned. And Jonathan, hopefully you'll be around for those podcasts that we're going to do. The idea, I think, is we're going to do podcasts in webinar format so people will be able to see visuals. But the flow of the shows, I think, is going to be just like our normal podcast. But if you want to watch live, you'll join through Citrix and be able to see everything going on. If you can't do that, you can still listen to the podcast as normal. You up for that, JK?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. Travel always is tricky, but I would imagine we'll be able to work it out.
Yeah, hopefully. When are you planning on getting out there to Santa Anita? Do you have your plans ironed out yet?
No, that's what's funny is, I don't know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, like literally any one of those 3 days, we'll see.
Me too. I might be Monday, I might be Tuesday, I might be Wednesday at this point, trying to figure out what the heck is going on. Mike Hogan, any chance you'll be making an appearance, or are you going to be betting the Breeders' Cup via simulcast?
Yeah, I'll be back here in New York, watching remotely, but I know you guys will have a fantastic time.
It should be good. I mean, as I said to Steve Bick the other day in my weekly At the Races spot, I can't recall a Breeders' Cup where there were so many horses you could make a movie about. You know what I mean? There's so many big picture storylines. Let's start today's show there. I was going to start with baseball, and we're going to loop back to baseball. I don't want to let that go. But since the Breeders' Cup came up so organically, and it's one of the hashtags I put on the Spreaker feed too, we'll start there. Of all the races at the Breeders' Cup, and there's an obvious answer here that I wonder if everyone will pick. Jonathan, we'll start with you. Which of these stars, actually, this is how I'm going to ask it to make it a little trickier. Which of these stars, these horses that you could make a movie about, are you most looking forward to seeing at the Breeders' Cup?
Well, yeah, I mean, we know the obvious one, right? So I'll just skip that one. I guess the one that I'm the most excited about, and I hope the movie is starring me, is Not This Time.
You are so arrogant. I love it.
I didn't mean it like that. I meant like I'm just hoping I can get some money so that I can pay off some bills. That's what I meant. I didn't mean it in a I'm right away. I meant it as like a – I'm just hoping that the horse is good and he becomes one of the greatest horses of our lifetime, because how much fun would that be to be a part of it at the beginning? And it wasn't any logic of mine. It was the logic of others that I just decided to participate with.
Well, the problem is that movie's not going to have its potential end until the first Saturday in May, if you have your way. How about the Breeders' Cup itself, Mike? Which of these stars are you most looking forward to seeing run?
As a fan? Oh,
yeah,
boy.
As a fan.
I mean,
fucking as a fan.
I guess, you know, I guess there's a chance, obviously, California Chrome could be just a really, really special horse. I mean, it's interesting the career arc he's taken, where, you know, he was a Derby winner. Some people doubted him going into the Derby. Then he was going to be a Triple Crown winner. And then after that, everybody jumped off the bandwagon. And now he's rounding into form as one of the better older horses we've seen in a long, long time. He's already the career money earner, and you know, it's just kind of a weird, fun, twisted story with a bunch of ups and downs, and you know, the owners being heroes, then villains, then who knows what. And it's just it's an interesting one.
He's the horse I'm most looking forward to seeing run, I think.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we, you know, since no one else said it, the distaff's going to be phenomenal, and it's an exciting story. It's a great handicapping puzzle, and it's really exciting to see what's going to happen there. But also, we can't forget about a horse that's graced us with so many great moments this year, and that's Teppan. Her opportunity out there on firm ground for the first time, or at least for the first time as what she has become. She did run in Del Mar at one time, but she wasn't what she is now. So it's exciting to see what's going to happen. There's a little bit more drama there after her defeat, and so we'll see what happens there. But that's another one I can't wait to see her run.
I'm glad you mentioned the. I'm glad you mentioned the distaff, because I've been, you know, some of it was a little snarky, and maybe obviously I'll do my full handicapping once we get closer to the race. But right now, and I've tweeted this out a little few times and had some discussions with people. Right now, I am very excited about the distaff, largely because I think there's a very, very short priced favorite we have in there that I see as potentially third or fourth most likely winner. And to me, that presents a fantastic betting opportunity.
Expand on that, Mike. What are you talking about
I mean, Songbird right now, I think overseas in the UK is trading at 8 to 11. So, you know, let's say even if it's not that excited, you know, if people aren't quite that excited, we still get even money on Songbird. By my logic, she not only isn't as good yet as Stellar Wind and Beholder, you know, at the price that I'm likely to get on, say, a horse like Curlina, I would so happily use Curlina much, much more than I would use a horse like Songbird at a short price.
Well,
I mean, good luck
crazy.
With that is the first
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm going to try to beat her, but she's the fourth most likely winner to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Third at least. I mean, there's no way so look, she's been brilliant running against much lesser. I mean, let's do an analogy here where you've got horses, you know, a horse, let's say, who's 10 for 10 and been beating up on horses at Golden Gate. And then they ship down to face the best horses in a good year at say, Santa Anita. Okay. That kind of horse, you know, I would love to play if I get a price. It's a huge class test for a horse who, sure, could be one of the greatest you've ever seen. But if you're taking 4 to 5 on her or even money on her or whatever, you're betting that she is one of the greatest we've ever seen. And if it were an off year for the older fillies, if we didn't have Stellar Wind and Beholder both at the top of their game, if it was an off year and it was a wide open race, that's one thing. But to expect that she's going to step up and trounce at a short price these older fillies and mares who have been really good all year, that's the kind of play I will happily play against every day.
Well, that's your prerogative. And we're going to be talking about this race so much, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole now. We're going to have plenty of time to talk about this race. The one point I will make, Mike, is you say – trounce like there's any extra credit for winning the way she's been winning. She wins by a nose, she wins by the length of the stretch. It's all going to be the same to the connections and the people who backed her. So I wouldn't get too hung up on that element of it. But, you know, like I said, we'll come back to that. A few other horses that you could make films about who are going to be running. Obviously, there's the distaff gives you two of them, I think, in terms of Songbird with what she's shown, the potential she has going forward. Beholder, what a great story there. All she's been doing for the last 4 years, it seems like, is winning grade one races. And then we didn't even mention Lady Eli yet. That might be the best story of them all, just from a pure narrative point of view. And let's not forget a filly named Found, who very likely doing that same ambitious campaign as last year, running in the Arc, coming back on Champions Day this weekend, and then looks to come back in 2 weeks' time. So there's a whole lot of story. There's more grist for the mill in terms of the narrative than any Breeders' Cup I can remember. How about you, JK?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's one that's going to be exciting, and it's one that, you know, we've talked about. I talked to my buddy Jack Jenkins about this the other day. Where I was saying at this point last year and the year before that, I had about 75 horses that I could not.
We lost you there for a second, JK. Yeah. Any idea there's what happened there?
No clue. There's like 75 horses that I could not wait to bet in the Breeders' Cup. And I really don't know what direction I'm going to go. There's so many wide open races, in my opinion. I mean, obviously, there's some that aren't wide open. And so I'm really excited about it. I'm looking forward to the opportunity to kind of dive into these PPs and start trying to come up with some creative ideas.
That seems like that's a real optimist view. I mean, I would feel like I would much rather know from this far out a bunch of horses I was going to bet than having to be looking forward to doing the work and doing the digging. But is that just a testament to how much you enjoy the handicapping process?
Well, of course, but, you know, but it's also a testament of how many of those horses that are still running that I wanted to bet last year. So I'm okay with a different approach.
I like it. I like it. I like the optimism and I like the attitude. Let's talk about Found for a minute. We did get a question about her, specifically asking if it's any concern, all the hard racing. And I would simply say no, just because of what she was able to accomplish last year. I mean, she's clearly a filly who thrives on her racing. We've seen this before. I've told the story on the podcast. I saw all three of those races in that same month time span, and I felt like I was exhausted just from the travel alone, let alone then to go out and put up a huge athletic performance. Add to that, I went down to the paddock. Her coat was going. She looked great at Ascot. Her coat was going. She looked 50 pounds lighter to my untrained eye, and I was like, well, there's one horse I can toss. I was originally going to do something more along the lines of what Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge winner Tommy Massis did, and I ended up just putting it all on Flincher on the paddock, and obviously that didn't work out too well. But I would just say I think you can trust that she's a filly who has been through this kind of program, and I'm not concerned at all. I will note one thing, though. Highland Reel, who's had success running in North America, who was second, obviously, in the Arc, is skipping Champions Day to run in the Breeders' Cup. And from a Coolmore point of view, you could sort of spin out the yarn that Found has done what Found has to do, whereas he could still probably benefit a bit more in terms of value from the Breeders' Cup turf victory. So knowing that's the plan, if Found has so much of a hiccup between now and the Breeders' Cup, there is a situation where I could see them, you know, saying, hey, let's put the eggs in the other basket. So that's the only pause it gives me. If she shows up, I think she has to be taken very, very seriously. But that did stick in the back of my mind. A couple of other horses who are skipping Champions Day, which to me indicates they will be running at the Breeders' Cup. If folks want to get an early line on maybe looking at some of their replays on YouTube, etc., Limato is a horse to take a look at, who could go, I suppose, in the sprint or the mile. I'm kind of feeling the downhill for Limato for some reason. And then also Alice Springs, who would appear, I would think, to be going in the mile. So take a look at those three and get started on your European handicapping. Obviously, that's a topic we'll be covering a lot more as time goes on. Do either of you guys have a thought about that Found question?
No, not really. I mean, I trust the trainer implicitly, and he knows what's best, and he's certainly won the race before. And if she runs well Champions Day, and then if he feels she's good enough and ready to run the Breeders' Cup. If you like her, and you know, I mean, I'd have to do the full handicapping. It wouldn't scare me off of playing her, scare me off of even keying around her if I felt like she was the most likely winner.
Anything to add to that, JK?
No, not a problem for me. I mean, look, I mean, I think that my bet is already, well, I guess I was just saying that I don't have who I'm going to bet in those races, but I want Flincher on firm ground if he's going to be second or third choice in that race, which could potentially happen.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to see who all shows up. It'll be interesting to see, obviously, and looking forward to what promises to be a fascinating race this year. Not necessarily the walkover for Flincher that many were predicting a little while ago, but he's still obviously, it's hard to get too off of him just based on the situation in New York. I think I still need to go back and watch those races again. I get the point that the ground wasn't that soft, and I get the point that he'd acted on soft ground before, but I do think there was something about that ground that day that he was just having trouble getting over it. It wasn't necessarily the softness of it. It might have been more like the slickness of it. Ground that had not absorbed a lot of water deep in, but was wet on the surface. I mean, your race watching skills, JK. I mean, it's your conclusion that he didn't like that ground. Is it based on just an assumption because of the performance, or did you see something specifically in the way he was getting over it?
It just wasn't the same horse that I watched run whatever it was three or four times this year at Belmont on Belmont Day, and then Saratoga twice, and I guess maybe that was the three. It just wasn't the same horse. It didn't seem like to me. And so, you know, I mean, maybe he lost a step. Maybe there was an issue that we don't know about. I don't think that was it. So I have to blame something, and I'm going to blame the ground the wet ground that brought him to America from overseas because of his dislike for that surface.
How about you, Mike? Are you voting tailing off, or it was a ground issue for Flincher at this stage?
Well, I mean, what we talked about at the time, I still believe. I mean, I think it's less about the ground and more about the pace dynamics. You know, when you get a loose horse, you know, that you know, just with a short field, you know, it's even the best horses, it's hard to run down a horse like that. And, you know, with a larger field and perhaps a more sensible pace. I mean, he's an absolute of any of the horses running currently in North America. He's absolutely the one I would want. It's funny. I did a little bit of buyer work over the last week. I don't know if you guys saw me tweeting this out. I had some questions from, I think, one of our listeners wanted to know about top buyers and how many horses, particularly thinking about Frosted and Arrogate, how many horses in recent years had posted a buyer of 115 or higher and then come back and done that again. And so I did that on the turf. And I hadn't realized this. There have only been, I think, in the last 10 years, maybe about 20 buyers on the turf of 110 or higher. There's only one horse in the last 10 years who's had more than one 110 or higher performance, and that's Flincher, who's had three. So he's one of the best turf horses we've seen here that runs regularly here. I won't discount him at all in Breeders' Cup.
You did also, Mike, have that great tweet about, what was it, horses who ran on the dirt, a figure of 115 five times. What was the question you asked? It was good.
Well, the question was, you know, and then this is going back to 1992 was the first year that the buyer figures were in the daily racing form. So any horse that regularly competed prior to 92 is out of the conversation. So it was, there have been three horses that have ever posted a 115 buyer or higher 10 times or more. And I just asked people who were the three. I don't know if you guys saw the answer.
I saw the answer, but we can put JK on the spot. I mean, I know your fandom doesn't go back that far, but I don't know. You're a competitive guy. You want to take a crack at it, Jonathan?
How many am I guessing?
Three horses. 10 115 buyers or higher.
Ghost Zapper?
Nope. He had five. Ghost Zapper didn't race enough. I think he had 11 career races.
If he'd had another year or two, races. You would have got him.
Ghost Sapper actually had 4 120 plus buyers, but and I think he had a 116 as well.
So you weren't far off in that sense, Jonathan.
Okay, I give up then. That was my like slam dunk. Everything else is going to be worse than that.
You got to go mid-90s. I think mid-90s.
Oh, I was still watching The Simpsons and playing with G.I. Joes in the 90s.
Well,
you're making us feel old. I'll let you reveal the answer, there, Mike.
There was a really good – so I'll start with number the horse that had 10 of them. He was a really good sprinter for Bruce Headley, out based primarily in California. You want to guess? Does that help at all?
This one, no? You know.
I'm going. Yeah, I know, but I'm going blank on. I do know, but I'm going blank on the name.
We talked about him a lot last year because he wasn't training very well up into the Breeders' Cup in his year, and that was compared to a horse who wasn't training very well last year. They both won.
A Kona Gold.
That's right. Okay. Kona Gold had 10. Next on the list with 11 is a failed turf horse for Bill Mott.
Oh, Cigar?
That's right. basically gave it away. And then the top of the list, I don't know. I don't want to give it away too much. I'll just say a monster horse. This horse had 14 115 buyers. And actually, when you talk about consistent horses, consistently long, longevity and consistency, at least in the last 30 years, this guy would be near the top of the list. I'll say Son of Skip Trial. Give that.
I'm just guessing because of the name, but I'm not guessing.
I think you guessed.
No, like this horse is really old, and I'm going to be really wrong, but I was going to say Skip Away, but Skip Away's
skip
old.
Skip Away. No, okay. Skip Away. Yeah.
Mid-90s. How old do you think we are, Jonathan?
I wonder sometimes.
That may be our first and possibly only ever trivia on the Daily Racing Form podcast. You can tell this is what happens. We are going to get to the public handicapper races today, but this is what happens when two of the races are happening on Sunday, and it's hard to have been fully up to speed, I'd say, to talk about those races to any great depth. We end up going down a couple of rabbit holes, but hopefully folks appreciate the irreverence and will stick with us. And speaking of irreverence, a quick sports conversation I wanted to have. Amazing baseball game last night. I can't remember, Mike. I know you grew up a Dodger fan. Are you still a Dodger fan?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not as big a baseball fan as I used to be. So, yeah, as far as teams that I follow, I am a Dodger fan. You know, I have a rooting interest. For me, the Dodgers ultimately were Vin Scully. Because I grew up listening to him, and it's like I grew up. The first racetrack that I ever went to was Saratoga. The first baseball announcer I ever listened to was Vin Scully. I didn't know how good I had it. So he's been kind of the glue for me that's kept me a Dodger fan. So I'll be sad to watch a Dodger game without hearing Vin next year. But yeah, they're still the National League team I root for.
And what did you think of that game last night? Unbelievable stuff. And what I really want to talk about, which I think I can relate back to horse playing, is the difference in managerial approaches and styles. But as a Dodger fan, just curious to get a little bit of a window into your emotions as you watched that crazy game 5 between the Nationals and Dodgers last night.
Well, I love the idea of bringing in your best reliever when you need to, when the game is on the line and you have to win the game. Why bring in a second or third tier reliever to save your best guy for later? So I love that. I love that they went almost 3 innings with Kenley Jansen.
It came in the 7th inning of the game, yeah. Which is, made many managers, including Dusty Baker in the opposing dugout, just makes that sort of old orthodoxy, like it makes their head spin. This in a world where Zach Britton doesn't even get into the game when the Orioles are eliminated, it's like I agree with you, Mike, just incredibly sharp stuff.
Yeah, that said, in the 9th inning, he started to look a little bit like Run Happy in the final furlong of his last race. He was leaking oil pretty badly. And so, then you think, okay, who do you bring in? You've used your best reliever. What happens now? Oh, look. The best pitcher in the game is warming up. The best left-hander we've seen in the last, I don't know how many years, is warming up in the bullpen.
Kershaw comes in, gets his first save since the minor leagues 10 years ago when the catcher was Kenley Jansen. That's a true story.
That's amazing.
To bring it back to, then after the game, Dusty Baker, who, I mean, I'm just going to say this about Dusty Baker. I don't think he'd make it very far as a professional horse player. And reading his comments after the game, and he's marveling and looking ahead and being like, well, yeah, they won, but I wonder what they're going to do, how tired those pitchers are going to be when they go to Chicago on Friday. I mean, to me, I was just struck by that. Like, what a loser's attitude. First of all, what a silly thing to say. And second of all, you got to win the game you're playing now or there is no game tomorrow. So I found it astonishing.
Right.
But the question I wanted to ask, and I do believe there is a right answer, and Jonathan, you can come back from doing your macrame or whatever you do when we talk about baseball. I'll ask you, of all the – you're an aficionado, I know, especially of football coaches. But I'll ask it this way. Of all the coaches you are familiar with in professional sports, Jonathan, who do you think would make the best professional horse player? I'm suddenly thinking the answer should be Dave Roberts for the managerial brilliance I thought he showed last night. But looking at all of sports, what do you think the answer is?
It's a very close finish between these two, and they're complete opposites. But it's either going to be Bill Belichick or Rex Ryan. It's one of those two guys.
Wow, Rex Ryan. Interesting. For me, Belichick is like the slam dunk, no doubt about it. Like, I'm kind of convinced he has a secret life as a professional horse player from some of the wise guy stuff I see him do. But give me the case for Rex Ryan, who to me seems like he'd be too bombastic and bet himself into oblivion before the jump.
I've been called bombastic before.
Oh, no.
You relate to him.
No, I actually think he's a good football coach, too. I just think he's been a little unlucky, and he's easy to come down on because he can be silly.
You don't think he's kind of a buffoon?
No, I don't at all. I think he's an unbelievable players coach. I think his guys play hard for him.
His players love him.
And I think that's half the battle. Yeah, that's half the battle.
Yeah, but
and they play hard for him out of love, not out of fear. I think a lot of Belichick's players play hard for him out of respect and fear, which either one's fine. It's, you have to pick your style that works for you. But the important part is getting your players to play for you. So anyway, that's off
topic. How does that relate, though, to – that's the thing. Like, I agree with you. I think his genius is the players. Whatever he must be the greatest in the locker room. My wife worked on Trevor Price's book. Trevor Price did a series of children's books. And so through her, I was able to sort of have a conversation with Trevor about Ryan. He basically just confirmed everything you're saying about how much players love playing for him. I always thought he was a good coach as much as he was because of that. But I just thought for watching him for years, between the strategy and some of the, you know, press conference shenanigans, that I didn't see where he'd be making it a living at the window. So I'm just curious if you saw anything specific to indicate that from Mr. Rex.
No, I just think his personality is one that would allow him to surround himself with people that will make him better. And I just think that's the case. You know, Bill Belichick reminds me of kind of like an Eric Moomy, which, you know, it's a good time to bring up Eric's name. He's going through some health things and hopefully he's feeling better. But, people that have big personalities like that, I just think that they have a lot more tools to be successful because they're not doing it by themselves.
Interesting point. What do you got on this, Mike?
What I have on this, and we talked a little bit of baseball, and JK's obviously not a baseball fan. We're talking football, and I am definitely not a football fan. But I watched something I saw a video on the Bleacher Report. I don't know if either of you guys saw this, about a high school coach in Little Rock, Arkansas, Pulaski Academy, coached by the name of Kevin Kelly. Have you seen anything about this?
Yeah, sure. This has been written about a lot.
Yeah. So I would say that this guy right there, he's a fantastic horse player. And JK, if you're not familiar with him, he's a coach, high school coach. He doesn't believe in punting. He always goes for it on fourth down. He always goes for two. He always does an onside kick unless they're up by 21 or more. And he has the analytics behind it to back it up. And and especially at the high school level, it makes sense. I mean, how many great high school punters can you think of? They all go like, what, 20 yards maybe? So you're giving up this potential advantage of having an extra down for what, 15, 20 yards? So anyway, he turned this team around from a team that wasn't really successful to one of the best high school teams in certainly in the state of Arkansas. And he's been getting a lot of attention for the way he plays. And I think as the lesson for horse players is that's how you have an edge. If you're doing the same thing that everybody else is doing, you're finding the same horses, you're betting into the same, to the teeth of the same smart money. If you're looking for things and you're doing things differently, that's the way you win in the long term.
I love that answer, Mike. Jonathan, I'm curious if you've read about that dude, and as a former high school football coach yourself, what you think of the whole thing.
Yeah, no, I've actually had a friend, some friends of mine that I coached with played against him. He came down. Yeah, he came to Texas and like played against them. I mean, they won. Kudos to him. I believe in football. If you score first, you should go for two every time. I think it puts the pressure on the other team, and you're going to have to score again to win. But with that said, like I get it. But he also, I think he has a little bit of success because he's probably playing teams he's better than. But I love it. I agree with Mike completely. It's a great analogy. That if you do what everyone else is doing, then you have no edge. It's when you do stuff differently, and it's not what you do, but how you do it that makes the difference. And so I commend him for that. I mean, I commend him for being different because I know he's probably been ridiculed a lot in the coaching circle for doing that. But
yeah, sure,
it makes sense.
All right, that's a good segue. You got one more point on that, Mike?
No, not at all. I was just going to say it goes back to the dunderheaded Dusty Baker type thinking, when everyone's like, oh, this guy doesn't punt, yeah. Like the old guard, whatever. They can continue what they're doing and happily lose and go golf in October.
And that's the perfect segue to Christian Helmers, who's who I want to talk about next. Christian, well known to people from the Horse Players TV show, already coming into this past weekend, one of the best contest player resumes of all time. It's 2 seconds at the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, a win in the Horse Player World Series. I know it wasn't for nearly as big of a prize as those, but it always impressed me that this guy, known more as a live bankroll player, has also won one of the NTRA free events against 2,500 other entries out of his main comfort zone. I always thought that was a little nice little feather in his cap, or should I say headband. But then this past weekend, he goes and down to $500 heading into the last two races, plays a cold double, ends up with 19 grand, wins the Santa Anita contest, and now he's drawing live for $1 million bonus at the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. Jonathan, I know you know Christian. I'd love to hear your thoughts on his performance and where this sort of leaves him in the conversation of who the top tournament players are all around.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Christian's great. And kudos to, and I'm sure he'd say the same thing, kudos to Nate Newby for adding the double out in their live tournament. But it's great, man. I think that's a really good way to finish it. It's not the typical thing that I think a lot of tournament players or tournament detractors dislike, which is the all in the last race situation. It's a situation where he made a play. That's a play that I could see a horse player making at the track in a normal situation, a $500 double on two horses they like late. And it just happened to work out for him. And congratulations to him. That's really awesome.
Do you think, here's a question for you, just let's nitpick it just for fun, just from a contest strategy point of view. The winner coming into the leader at that point, who'd been the leader basically since the end of day one and had been playing conservatively, was about 14,000. He went ahead and made these bets that projected to pay the 19,000 that it paid. Do you think that was the right way to approach it, to try to get 5,000 clear of the person who was there? Or do you think maybe he should have actually not bet so much on that combo and maybe tried to cover something else. I'm not saying that I think he should have done that. I just, you know, or were those just, you know, he had 500 left and those were the two horses he liked and that was the decision process. I'm just trying to get like a little window into where his brain was at heading into those two races.
No, absolutely. I do think so, because it's not so that much you have to worry about the guy who's in first with 14,000, but you have to worry about the guys that are second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth that have less than that, that are all going to be firing to try to get to him. And you have to think that that target's going to move. So, you know, and especially if he was playing horse, I think he played like a couple of like what, 4-1 shots. If he feels that strongly about those 4-1 shots winning, he's got to feel that other people are going to cash on those as well and continue to move forward. I think it's a brilliant way to go about it is to move your target a little bit and aim a little bit higher.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. I was also struck by what an overlay the combination was. I mean, I know that late double pool at Santa Anita is big, so you wouldn't necessarily expect a $500 bet to move the needle very much, but still to get a couple 4-1 shots more or less and have that come back 77-2. It was just a great play all around, and props to Christian. You know, he does things his own way. He's a vegan, he's a raw food guy, he's a Burning Man guy. Like not the typical demographic you see at handicapping contests, but clearly whatever Christian's got going on under the hood in terms of his handicapping and his aggressive betting, the guy's got an edge and has to be respected by just about everybody. Mike, I know you saw the Horse Players show. What was your impression of Christian just as a character on TV?
Well, you know, I think character is the good word because. You know, I've never met Christian in person, but I think a lot of it, and, you know, of course, the TV program will play up whatever characters they can, and hopefully you're not hearing any drilling that's happening on the other side of the wall.
Oh, we're hearing it.
Yeah, wonderful, huh? You gotta love working in the middle of a construction zone.
Sorry, just try to persevere. Well, you can mute after, and JK and I'll take the rest of the way.
I was muted before, and it just started a couple of minutes ago, so hopefully it won't last very long. Anyway, the point being, you know, Christian's a big personality. They played it up on the show. I'm sure some of that was for show, and regardless of what you think of him as a person or the character that was portrayed of him as a person, it's very, very clear that he's smart and he isn't just lucky, that he does this consistently, and he's consistently winning contests at a high level, especially these live bank ones. He is, if you're playing in a live bank and you see his name anywhere near the leaderboard, you know, I would be scared.
Well, how about you talk about being scared of Christian? How about the folks who have this $1 million insurance policy? How do you think, how do you think they're feeling right now, JK?
Yeah. I'm sure they're looking at the odds and saying, wait, so we have a guy that's live for $1 million that's run second in this event 2 years in a row.
Not the best feeling. All right, guys, we got about 20 minutes left on the show today, and we should get to these races. If we breeze through them as much as I think we might, maybe we'll have a little bit of chat, a little more Breeders' Cup chat at the end of the show. We got a request for some of that. But let's start. Let's go to Belmont Park and talk about the Pebbles. Jonathan, have you had a chance to have a thorough look at this one?
I have. And the first thing I when I saw it, I was like, we have a lot of three-year-old turf fillies. We have a grade one at Keeneland. We have 14 horses entered in this race at Belmont. And this is a tough spot for me. I mean, look, both of the Chads make sense, Ancient Secret and She Doesn't Mind. But ultimately, I landed on the horse Welcoming. Manny Franco has been riding really, really well. You don't need me to tell you about Christophe Clement on the turf. But the race two back, I was just impressed with against Ancient Secret. I thought the pace was pretty slow that day. The horse was kind of off of it early, had to make up a little bit of ground, finished well. The horse just kind of projects to improve to me. And I feel like the horse will be finished. I think the price will be right. I mean, look, the Chads make sense. I wouldn't do anything without them. But in a situation kind of like with a tournament setting, I would definitely use Welcoming.
What about the pace scenario? I mean, I think that's been the undoing of Welcoming to this point, as you've mentioned. I mean, kind of a flow upgrade out of the last race as well, I would say. Do you think there'll be enough speed in here for things to set up for that late kick?
No, I think so. It feels like Believe in Birdie should be Ford. It feels like Ultra Brad, if it can kind of go back to some of the dirt races, will be Ford. Louisville First could be Ford. You know, Thundering Sky breaking from the outside has been forwardly placed, might have to move a little bit earlier than they would like. No, it feels like it's a full field. So that's another thing that always can kind of be a deciding factor in trying to get places. I think a lot of times horses trying to get position can sometimes speed it up a little bit.
I agree wholeheartedly. Mike Hogan, what did you come up with in the Pebbles, if we can hear you over the construction?
Well, the construction, thankfully, and I'll knock on some sort of fake wood that I'm sitting near, has stopped for the moment. So hopefully we're done for the rest of the podcast. I landed on, you know, and this is, you guys are right. This is a very, very interesting race. There's really three horses that I like in here. And I think the one that I landed on in my top pick is Insta Irma for Bill Mott and the Zayats, coming off of a couple consecutive wins, now stretching out back to a route distance. Bill Mott is fantastic on the stretch out. I tweeted out a stat about it. 4 for 10, ridiculous ROI, sprinter route off a win in New York. This horse just absolutely fits and seems like will get a very good trip stalking the speed. I think will be a good price. I don't trust at all of the Chad Brown horses. The one I really, really don't trust and I hope takes a lot of money is Ancient Secret. Yeah, she looked good in the Lake George. She beat a field that's come back and done absolutely nothing out of that race. If you go back and then you go back to the Wild Applause, she beat a few horses that she's going to be facing again. You know, she's the best of that group, but I don't think that group is really the top. And I think that's why we're seeing them at Belmont in a listed stakes rather than down at Keeneland in the Kiwi 2, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention Stella Rose. I haven't, unfortunately, sometimes this happens, been writing a piece about contest player Jim Riley, who had a great and interesting weekend last weekend on DRF tournaments, and I didn't get a chance to do my tape work. Did anybody notice the trip that Stella Rose got in the Commonwealth Oaks last time at Laurel?
I didn't. I have a trip on the other Chad Brown that I'll talk about if we have a minute. But no, I didn't notice that one.
I'm gonna have to go back and watch that. My eye was drawn to Stella Rose. I wanted sort of a reason to I wanted a reason to excuse that race a little bit more. That's all. I think you guys made compelling cases for both of yours, and you know perhaps at my peril was hoping this is a situation where maybe we could actually beat Chad Brown for once. What was the other trip note you wanted to mention there, Mike, before we move on?
Well, talking about She Doesn't Mind and the Risk Averse, who finished behind Stella Rose in that allowance, in that optional claimer, in the Risk Averse, she ran behind a really, really good horse that I'm sure we'll talk about in the QE2 when we get there in On Leave. She Doesn't Mind had every bit of an excuse in there. She was a little fractious in the gate. She broke well. She dropped back, made a big middle move up into traffic on the back stretch. She waited for room in the stretch. She finally kicked clear. She ran well once she did. She was not as good as the winner, but that's okay. I think On Leave is, and we'll get to her in a minute, as I said, I think On Leave is one of the best three-year-old fillies on turf we've got this year.
That might be the perfect segue, Mike, to go right to the QE2. Is On Leave who you're picking in here?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
You pretty much already made the case. I mean, you're not. I mean, I did think yes, it was a terrific race, and yes, she's shown other dimensions before. But it did seem that she was definitely the benefit of a favorable setup there. But you think that was just a happenstance, and she's gonna reproduce that form under different settings this time around?
Yeah, I think, you know, she'll get a good trip. There's a little bit more speed in here than there was in that race. There wasn't any speed. They gave her the lead. She took it. You know, there's no knocking a horse that's rateable or can go to the front if they have the opportunity to do so. You know, I mean, it's like we talked about in the podcast. If you give a good horse a tactical edge, Jose Ortiz took it. You know, he said, okay, they're going to let me go. Fine. I'll run away from this field. I don't think that's necessarily her best running style. I think she gets back to that stalking trip, sitting in third or fourth, three or four lengths behind the speed. I think she sits and pounces. I think this is a horse that's just on the improve. Obviously, the blood is there. She's a sibling to Ironicus. Shug has managed her very well, went through her conditions into the graded stakes last out. I'm expecting a huge thing at potentially a nice price. She'll be the third choice in here.
I guess third choice is probably right.
Yeah.
Cause I don't think they're really going to come for Hawksmoor. JK, what are your thoughts on the QE2? Are you with Mike on leave?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts. First, she'll be the fourth choice because Harmonize will go off shorter than her, in my opinion.
Good. Good.
And then the other part I was going to say is we have another head-to-head challenge.
Ooh, I like it. Who do we got?
Okay.
Who do we got in one of the stakes? Another two days worth of Avatar this time? What are we looking at? And maybe I can get in on this one. I'm feeling left out. Explain what you're talking about.
Well, first of all, we'll think about the stakes as we go. I'll take MoCat versus On Leave. And MoCat's not even my pick, but I just think that the horse I think sort of win's not even fair. But I'll just take MoCat. That's fine. This is the perfect example. We brought it
doubling up. Doubling down with Baltus.
I was going to say, anytime Baltus is in the race, Tienchin's going to start throwing hands.
Baltus and Kent. And, it's easy.
Well, and who's the owner?
Yeah, exactly. JK,
can't go wrong there. No, this is just a handicapping point that we actually brought up. Not too long ago, which is that this is the obviously at Belmont scenario when he was running against King Creasa. Yes, On Leave has gotten, she ran well in her last race and that was her most impressive race, and in her four race winning streak. But she's about to chase a filly who's faster than her, who's better than her, and who just came off of a trip in which she was ridden too patiently and lost because of that. They are going to let it roll with Catch a Glimpse. She drew the rail. She likes this course. And On Leave is going to be chasing a filly that's faster than her and better than her. And I do not see a scenario in which she can come out on top in that scenario. I think they'll either run each other into the ground, Catch a Glimpse will win, or someone will pick it up like Harmonize or MoCat. For value, I'll go with MoCat. I think that On Leave is going to rate and Catch a Glimpse is going to go, and Catch a Glimpse is better than them. I think Catch a Glimpse will win, but she's 2-1. There's not a lot of fun there. But I would try to hook Catch a Glimpse up with Harmonize and MoCat with On Leave out of the trifecta.
Ooh, well, Mike, first of all, do you accept the challenge?
I guess so. I mean,
you have to. If On Leave is your pick, you got to take On Leave against MoCat.
Sure.
But then I also just wanted to ask you guys how you can talk about this race for 5 minutes and not say the name of the winner.
You strike me as a time and motion guy.
I can't even propose to be part of your bet because it's not fair, I think, because time and motion is just a much more likely winner. I would assume you're not going to give me even odds on time and motion in a head-to-head-to-head against those two. But, I mean, I just think it sets up absolutely perfectly for her. I agree there is a serious danger of Catch a Glimpse being ridden even more aggressively this time and not stopping on a course she loves. But I've been a time and motion fan for a long time. I still kind of can't believe she couldn't get up in the Belmont Oaks that day. But that was just a great example of Catch a Glimpse finding more at the right time. I think form and figures and class and pace setup, everything to me points to time and motion for this one.
Fair enough. And one thing I'll mention, I actually tweeted this out, and it's a nice tie-in back to the Pebbles. Believe in Birdie is running in that race. That debut for all three of those horses, Believe in Birdie, On Leave, Time and Motion, all debuted August 31st at Saratoga. What a live maiden special weight race we had. And frankly, it's strange. None of them won next out. But you've got two, in my mind, two of the best. And Believe in Birdie was the winner of that race. She's not that far behind. Three really good stakes caliber fillies debuting the same race at Saratoga.
All right. Anybody else have any further thoughts on this race before we move on to the Canadian stuff?
Let's do it, eh?
All right. First of all, I say this every time we talk about Woodbine, just because I'd never been there before this year, liked it so much the first time, decided to go up a second time. Really just an amazing place, and American racing fans should go out of their way to make a trip to Woodbine at some point. I assume it's probably too late for most people to get their ducks in a row to get up for Sunday. Sunday, kind of a big day of racing. We've got the contest at Keeneland. That's going to be fun. See what's going on there. And then we've got these grade ones at Woodbine, the first of which we're going to talk about is the E.P. Taylor, which goes as the eighth race. This is a difficult race. This is a race that's going to take a really long time to handicap properly. And I'm just going to be perfectly honest. I haven't had the time to do it. A lot of times looking at European form, something will leap out at me. That's just not the case here. I need to do more digging. If I have anything clever about the E.P. Taylor, I will send it out from my Twitter, @loomsboldly. Mike, did you come up with anything in here?
Well, a little bit. I mean, the one that I like, and I was kind of leaning on you, Pete, as the European horse follower of the bunch. But I had actually had a question before I talk about who I kind of like a little bit. My two questions were this, and I guess this is the kind of the crux of the race. I don't really want any of these Americans. I think this is the second tier of the American older fillies. I think the best of the Americans in here is still going to be a big price in the filly and mare turf. So I think this opens the door for a European. So my question is, who's the best European? And then also, who gets the lead in here? And maybe that's an easier one to answer first.
JK, you have thoughts on either of those questions?
I mean, no, I don't have I don't know who's going to get the lead. I would think maybe Al's Gal, but that's kind of why I like the horse, because I don't know the answer to that question.
Right.
But I'll let you finish your point, Mike, and then we'll come back.
Anyway, the European that I think, and I don't know the prices, we don't have the morning lines yet. But the one I was interested in is Aim to Please. This trainer doesn't send many over here, but he's won before. When he sends them, they tend to be pretty live. This is a 3-year-old filly who seems to be on the improve. She's coming off a Group 3 win last out in France. I'm expecting her to be a fair price. She'll get a little bit of a weight break from the older ones. I don't know. She's the one I'm leaning towards now, but like Pete said, the PP's just came out late yesterday, so I haven't had the chance to do the full dive and watch all the foreign races yet, but she's who I'm leaning now.
I'll mention this, Tommy Massis. I was texting with him last night just to get his initial thoughts on these races, and he did mention his preference for the 3-year-old Europeans, generally speaking, in these races. They are getting a little bit of weight, and I just wanted to pass that idea along, which would sort of co-sign on your idea, Mike, and certainly point to Best in the World, who's going to take plenty of money as well. I was just trying to come up with an angle, and I just don't really have one at this point. Jonathan, are you committing to Al's Gal, or did you have some other thoughts in here?
No, I'm absolutely committed. Any horse that Mike Maker runs on the turf at a mile and a quarter or longer, a horse that he claimed, which is an automatic qualifier, a horse that's hit the board in six graded stakes, I mean, in six stakes races on six different racetracks, and in his last two races, in her last two races, closed from 16 out in a grade one at Arlington and then wired a field at Kentucky Downs. Like, a versatile filly like that with a trainer like Maker and a rider like Flo, I don't care. You're going to have to talk me off of a horse like that.
It makes a lot of sense. You had another point on this one, Mike?
I was just wondering if Bobby Flay's filly, Bonzari, is the one that gets the lead in here. I haven't watched the replays, but based on the short comments, it seems like she tends to be forwardly placed. And other than maybe Al's Gal, there's not really a lot of pace in here from the Americans.
I'll be very curious to read DRF coverage, see if we can hear. I'm curious about the story about that filly. Always interested to hear who Ron Gierkink picks, the excellent DRF analyst for Woodbine. Always worth checking that out. And then, of course, like Mike said, we'll spend some time watching the tape. If any brainstorms come in, I'll definitely send out some thoughts via Twitter. Let's move on to the other big race at Woodbine, the Canadian International. Jonathan, we'll start with you. You have a selection in this race?
Well, first of all, I want to nominate a horse. We have a championship where me and Pete are giving out at the end of the year for hang of the year. And we have a horse We have a horse. We have a horse that ran yesterday in the last at Keeneland. The 6-horse Quality Emperor
has been nominated. Definite new contender.
Yeah, has been nominated. Ecto.
Look out, Ecto.
Yep. For a race for his race prior to beating Flincher, and I would like to nominate today, after rewatching the race, Wake Forest for his performance against the Pizza Man.
That's harsh.
Chandelier. Ugh.
It's Chandelier. Not as bad as those others. I mean, at least he was compromised by the pace to some degree. You're not going to give me that.
No, you're right. Fair enough. But in that situation, he had dead aim and didn't go past a horse that I didn't like on the day and a horse I don't like today. I'm going to give Danish Dynaformer another shot. And this is a kind of a kooky angle, but it's one that's worked for me in the past and one that I recommend people keep an eye out for, is that when a people that you respect pick a horse in a spot and that horse doesn't run very well, I take a mental note of it and give that horse a little bit more bonus points the next time they come back. Now, if it's a bunch of people you don't think they have a good opinion and they pick a horse, but I heard a lot of people that whose opinion I respect. I even think that you did, Pete, pick Danish Dynaformer in the last start. Same argument that we had about Wake Forest. I'm being a little bit harsh. You're right about Wake Forest. The pace wasn't ideal for him. Danish Dynaformer was right there with him. And home court, I'm going to give Danish Dynaformer another shot.
I can't not use him in my spreads. I don't think I can make him my selection in a race like this, because I do think the market is going to tilt extremely heavily towards the foreign runners here. Mm-hmm. You have an even money favorite with this with the Aidan O'Brien horse, Idaho. This horse is going to get bet off the boards and is extremely live and logical. That run at York in the Voltiger, I'm probably mispronouncing that as bad as I mispronounced Alcibiades last show. But that run at York, left-handed, galloping course, very similar to Woodbine. But something just holds me back a little bit. I was talking to my friend Rob Dove last night, one of the top 10 pro punters in the UK today, and he was making the point that even though he'd had that good run on Good to Firm, that he didn't love his knee action for firm ground. He carries his legs a little high. That gave him a little pause. And then he just went for the point that if they really liked this horse, the route wouldn't be Ledger Canadian International. It would be Arc de Triomphe Champions Day, or at least Arc de Triomphe and Breeders' Cup. So it was enough things to give me pause. It could end up being a very short price. Perhaps I'm overstating it even money, but I kind of don't think so. Dartmouth is going to take a lot of money. Dartmouth might be where, put a gun to my head, I might land on Dartmouth. Michael Stout has a great record in this race. Hawkbill, who won this race last year, not Hawkbill. I'm having a pre-senior moment here. Star Hill, the winner of this race last year, Hill Star. Yeah, very similar looking form coming in.
Two years ago.
Oh, that was two
last,
years ago?
Last year was Canic Chase.
Oh, well, who's also Stout, right?
Right. Yeah. So, he owns this race.
Yeah. So right. It's a very similar form to the other Stout winners here. Something to pay attention to. And then the horse who I also think is going to take a ton of money. We've got the former Melbourne Cup winner coming in here off these open length wins. This horse, you've got to figure, is going to get bet. The form just looks like, something about the form is just too weird to me to go too much in protectionist camp. And I'm thinking, he will probably, hard to know. He made all the running last time and does have some speed to potentially keep the likes of World Approval honest. That's the horse that I keep coming back to. And I think for me, World Approval is just going to come down to price. I mean, there is a world in which he's isolated for 10 furlongs in this race. So now that I've mentioned half the field, Mike, I'll pass it along to you.
Well, you mentioned Idaho, you didn't, and you mentioned earlier Highland Reel, you didn't connect that they're full brothers. So
yes, they are. That's correct.
That's an interesting angle there. I'm kind of against Idaho at a short price. I mean, he's obviously a contender, and you know, maybe after what the debacle in the St. Ledger, you know, they want to get him back in the form, and if he continues well, they go on to the Breeders' Cup with him. But there's just enough question marks for me to try and go against him. I think of the Europeans, Dartmouth is the one I would want. Completely classy horse, and like you said, Sir Michael Stout basically owns this race. And then you're right, of the Americans, or the North Americans rather, World Approval is the one I want. He's going to be on the lead. I think he might be uncontested, even more so than last race. You know, he had a bit of a license to tire on the softer going and first time going as far as a mile and a half. Maybe he's a little fitter and improved off of that and takes them really far at a big price. So I'll probably play a Dartmouth as the most likely winner on top, but try and key him up with World Approval somehow.
All right, folks, that is all the time we have for today's show. We will be back next week on Tuesday to wrap up all the action from the weekend and begin our Breeders' Cup preparations in earnest. We'll be having a lot of additional Breeders' Cup coverage. Stay tuned for that. I want to thank Jonathan Kinchin. I want to thank Mike Hogan. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening. Have a great weekend, and may you win all your photos.